Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 11, Lord Ramachandra rules the world. Text number 27. Prasada Gopura Sabha. Chaitya Deva Grihadishu. Vinyasa Hema Kalashai. Pataka Bhishamanditam. Translation. The palaces, palace gates, the assembly houses, the platforms for meeting places, the temples, and all such places were decorated with golden water pots and bedecked with various types of flags. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, auspicious welcome gates were constructed with banana trees and betel nut trees, full of flowers and fruits. The gates were decorated with various flags made of colorful cloth and with tapestries, mirrors, and garlands. Wherever Lord Ramachandra visited, the people approached him with paraphernalia of worship and begged the Lord's blessings. O Lord, they said, you rescued the earth from the bottom of the sea, and your incarnation is a boar. May you now maintain it. Thus we beg your blessings. Thereafter, not having seen the Lord for a long time, the citizens, both men and women, being very eager to see him, left their homes and got up on the roofs of the palaces. Immediately satiated with seeing the face of the lotus-eyed Lord Ramachandra, they showered flowers upon him. Thereafter, Lord Ramachandra entered the palace of his forefathers. Within the palace were various treasuries and valuable wardrobes. The sitting places on the two sides of the entrance door were made of coral. The yards were surrounded by pillars of Vaidurya Mani. The floor was made of highly polished Marakata Mani. The foundation was made of marble. The entire palace was decorated with flags and garlands, and bedecked with valuable stones, shining with a celestial effulgence. The palace was fully decorated with pearls and surrounded by lamps and incense. The men and the women within the palace all resembled demigods and were decorated with various ornaments that seemed beautiful because of being placed on their bodies. Lord Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, chief of the best learned scholars, resided in that palace with his pleasure potency, Mother Sita, and enjoyed complete peace. Without transgressing the religious principles, Lord Ramachandra, whose lotus feet are worshipped by devotees in meditation, enjoyed all the paraphernalia of transcendental pleasure for as long as needed. Chapter 12. The Dynasty of Kusha, the Son of Lord Ramachandra. Sukadeva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha, the son of Kusha was Atiti, the son of Atiti was Nishada, and the son of Nishada was Nava. The son of Nava was Pundarika, and from Pundarik came a son named Shema Dhanva. So who was the son of Kusha? Atiti. And who was the son of Atiti? Who? Yes, very good. And the son of Nishita was? Oh, you have the book there. Okay, so try and remember these dynasties. I don't know what good it's going to do if you remember them, but The son of Shema Danva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra. And Pariyatra's son was Balastala. The son of Balastaya was Rajanava, who is said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. So who is born from the effulgence of the sun god? Yes, Rajanava. The son of Rajanava was Sagana, and his son was Vidriti. The son of Riditi was Hiranyaganaba, who became a disciple of Jainmini and became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It was from Hiranyaganaba that the great saint Yajnavalkya learned the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. The son of Hiranyaganaba was Pushpa, and the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi. The son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshana, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was Sigdra, and his son was Maru. Having achieved perfection in the mystic yoga, Maru still lives in the place known as Kalapagrama. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. Purport. At least 5,000 years ago, Shukadeva Goswami ascertained the existence of Maru in the Kalapagrama and said that Maru, having achieved a yoga city body, would continue to exist until the end of Kali Yuga, which is calculated to continue for 432,000 years. Such is the perfection of mystic power. By controlling the breath, perfect yogi can continue his life for as long as he likes. Sometimes we hear that from the Vedic literature that some personalities from the Vedic age, such as Vyasadeva and Ashvatthama, are still living. Here we understand that Maru is also still living. We are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time. The explanation of this longevity is given here by the word yoga siddha. One becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. Demonstration of some trifling yoga siddha does not constitute perfection. Here is a factual example of perfection. A yoga siddha can live as long as he likes. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskadya De Satarne. At the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that Dharmak Priyojita Kaitavo Tra Paramoni Matsaranam Satam, that the Bhagavatam kicks out all pretentious religious systems. Pretentious religious systems mean religious systems meant for material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation from the material bondage. So the Bhagavatam rejects these things and propounds a system of pure devotion to Krishna. But here in the ninth chapter, ninth canto, we find many explanations of different personalities that don't seem to be so devotional. Here we have an example of Maru, the only purport we've seen so far, and it says he lives for 432,000 years he'll live for. But in other parts of the Bhagavatam, we find Shukadeva Goswami saying, what is the value of living for so long? There are trees living for thousands of years, but what is their value? What good is it to live for so long? What will you accomplish? better a moment trying to become Krishna conscious than spending hundreds and thousands of years in Maya. Therefore, one may ask why Shukadeva Goswami is relating the ninth canto, especially all these dynasties. Is it to show that he is to exercise his memory? He got a list of names from Vyasadeva about the history of the universe. Now he's trying to see if he can remember them. Because what good is it going to do us to know that Vrajanava was the son of the, was coming from the effulgence of the sun god? For our devotional service, what is the value? Of course, there may be some value in the sense that, generally speaking, we think that Krishna consciousness just fell in from, you know, India, from, has no real basis. People think like that, that the Krishna consciousness movement just kind of appeared in the Western world. Some hippies, they had nothing else to do, so they became Hare Krishnas, because it was more far out than becoming a hippie. Hippies became ordinary, everyone became a hippie, everyone grew their hair long, but the Hare Krishnas were the first to shave off their hair, so that was even more far out. One time, some lady wrote a book called The Strange Sex Life of the Hare Krishnas. So one may wonder, what is The Strange Sex Life of the Hare Krishnas? I guess she wrote the title to sell books. And she concluded that the strange sex life of the Hare Krishnas was that they were celibate. So the Hare Krishnas are former hippies who became even more far out than everyone else. They became clean, they shaved their heads, they gave up sense gratification just to be completely different from everyone else. There was no other reason. And if everyone else becomes clean and well-behaved and shaven-headed and follows, gives up sense gratification, the Hare Krishnas, they're the ones who will get completely immersed in sense gratification, become worse than they were before, just to be different. No, there's actually a history that things are not happening accidentally, just like we stress the disciple succession. What Krishna spoke 5,000 years ago, we're simply trying to repeat today. It's not that we're trying to become creative and bring forward something more different. Generally, creativity is just, in the material world at least, material creativity for sense gratification is just a product of trying to enjoy the material energy in a different way. Because, generally speaking, our ability to enjoy the material energy is rather limited by eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. There's not much more you can do. And if you weren't happy the way you ate yesterday, or the way you slept last night, or the way you had sex life, or the way you try to defend your prestige or physical body from the mosquitoes or from people's criticism, whatever else. If you didn't think that you had perfected these things, well, don't worry, tomorrow you won't be able to do it either. Although people claim that there is history, past, present, and future, but actually, in the material world, there's no real past, present, and future. It's all the same thing over and over again. 5 million years ago, people were eating, they were sleeping, they were defending and mating. And today, people are essentially doing the same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And we can predict, as an astrologer, that in 5 million years ago, from now, that's what people are going to do. They're going to eat, they're going to sleep, they're going to mate and defend. Maybe 5 million years ago they ate with a golden fork, and now we're eating with plastic forks. But more or less the taste of the food was the same. 5 million years ago when people went to sleep, they were more or less experiencing the same thing we're experiencing when we go to sleep. That not anything, nothing has really changed, nor in the future, in the material world, anything's going to change. Whether you see something in three dimension on in a movie screen, it's not really that much different from seeing in three dimension when you're looking outside. The only difference is it doesn't cost anything to see things in three dimension outside. But people are not satisfied. Oh, we should, it probably gives the example that if a dog barks in the street, people pick up stones, at least in India, and throw rocks at it. Because it's creating disturbance. But in the Western world, if a man can bark, they put him in the circus and he barks like a dog, and people will spend, you know, $20, $50 to go and hear a man bark. So more or less, the same thing's going on. Maybe electronically it's going on, therefore people think, oh, this is different, because now we can hear a man bark on the radio. And therefore it's worth all the effort to hear it. But there's not much new happening, nor in the future much new will actually happen. It's simply the same thing. Punak punas charvita charvanana. But similarly, in the spiritual world, the same news is there that Krishna is going out. He's going to take the cows with him, and he's going to play in the forest with his cowherd boys. But the difference is that Krishna is unlimitedly full of pleasure. And therefore, by hearing about him, one also becomes full of pleasure in different varieties. Krishna's pleasure is always increasing and is always full of different varieties of love and different pastimes. So although it's the same thing, it's nitya yavanavanavana. It's always new and fresh. But the material world is always old and stale. Only due to propaganda do people believe that in the future everything's going to be nicer. Previously, there was no such propaganda, so people were not so much attached to living in the material world. But now, since the beginning of people's existence, they're trained up by their foolish parents, and that foolish education that you are your body and that you should, you know, get a good job and make a lot of money and make our family famous, and etc., etc. The same thing is affirmed by all the other foolish people. The teachers, our friends, the television, the radio, the movies, the internet, the books, everything. Mr. Agarwal was walking down the street and his friends decided to play a trick on him. So therefore, one of them jumped out of the bush and said, "Mr. Agarwal, you've become a ghost. What happened?" So Mr. Agarwal said, "This is crazy. I'm not a ghost. I'm still, nothing happened to me." "No, no, you've become a ghost. You know, what happened?" So he thought, "Oh, this guy's crazy." So he kept on walking and he saw one of his other friends jumped out of the bush and he saw him and he said, "Mr. Agarwal, what happened? You've become a ghost." He said, "What? I haven't become a ghost. I'm all right. There's nothing wrong with me." He kept on walking, and he saw another friend and said, "Mr. Agarwal, you've become a ghost. What happened?" So he started to think, "Wow, everyone's saying I've become a ghost. Maybe I've actually become a ghost." So if enough people say it, even Goebbels said that, you lie enough times, then people will start to believe it. So due to repeating the same foolish understandings of reality again and again, people have become foolish. Even we hear we're not the body, that the body's changing, but we ourselves are not changing. Still, because we've been trained up to be fools, therefore we can't take it so seriously. "Oh yeah, that's right, that's reality, but it doesn't really matter, because actually I am my body, although I'm not." Or even if I'm not my body, the real aim of life, as I've learned in school, that is to enjoy the senses into the end of life. And therefore, whoever I am, that's my goal in life. I may be God, I may be a soul, I may be a ghost, I may be anything, but I'm determined I'm going to gratify my senses. Whatever they demand, I'm going to do without any hesitation. But the real knowledge is coming from Krishna in the simple succession. And previously, even in the cultured families of the world, the culture would be delivered from one person to the next, from one dynasty to the next, from one king to the next. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is not only dealing with simply a list of names, it's dealing with a list of persons who were conveying the culture, if not the spiritual culture, at least the Vedic culture, from one king to the next. There was actually some consistency. And of course, this is leading up to the appearance of Lord Krishna, which is more or less the sonum bonum of the essence of the Bhagavatam. That Krishna just didn't appear out of nowhere. He appears in a dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, and the Yadu dynasty is a culture dynasty. And similarly, all his associates also appear in culture dynasties. Of course, Krishna himself, he doesn't depend upon appearing in a culture dynasty. He can appear anywhere at any time, but he does so to show that even in the material world, one should have some respect for the culture, especially the Vedic culture, which is coming down from time immemorial. That we're not only trying to chant Hare Krishna, but we're also trying to create an atmosphere by which the Hare Krishna mantra will become most effective. Maybe for a very advanced devotee, they can chant anywhere at any time under all circumstances and get the same effect because they're beyond the material experience. But for less advanced devotees, even the smallest distraction takes us away from devotional service. What to speak of Kali Yuga, which is specifically created to distract us to go as far away from Krishna as is possible in the human form of life. Therefore, we should have some idea how to create an atmosphere which is similar to the Vedic culture. Here we find they were not trying to, when Lord Ramachandra came down the street, they didn't tear up newspaper and throw newspaper at him. And they weren't bunking the horns and whatever else to show that they appreciated Lord Ramachandra. There was flowers they threw. Nowadays, they would never throw flowers at a person. And even if they did, the flowers wouldn't have any aroma. They'd throw paper flowers at them. And of course, for the leaders nowadays, they'd be more likely to try and shoot them when they came down the street and throw a flower at them. But here we find that the king was actually trained and he actually was working for the benefit of the people, not thinking day and night how to exploit them. Nor was he a puppet for others who were trying to exploit them. There was actually a system by which the king and the other leaders were trying to elevate people, if not to the spiritual world, at least to a higher position in the material world. And therefore the people appreciated them. And of course, people, we don't find that to honor Lord Ramachandra, they had a barbecue on the front lawn of the White House. No, they were civilized. They were, they had the best interests of all living entities at heart, and they actually had they knew what real opulence was: flowers and nice aromas and nice relationships. They weren't caught up with simply thinking that the goal of life is exploit as many people as possible and think that we're good people, because anyone we're exploiting, they're not a person. They suddenly become a non-person, so I don't feel bad about exploiting them. Prabhupada says, give them a bad name, give the dog a bad name, dirty dog, bad dog, and then you can hang it because it's a bad dog. Previously, it was a nice dog, didn't do anything wrong, but as soon as you said it was a bad dog, then it becomes a bad dog, and then you can do whatever they want with it because it's a bad dog. So similarly, call everyone whatever you like, create everything, that these, you know, the child in the womb is not a child anymore, it's not a living entity, because it's inconvenient to be a living entity. So it's just an organ, an unwanted organ. And then because it's an unwanted organ, naturally you could just remove it. And if it screams, it's only some air coming out of its mouth anyhow, because, you know, that's just a reaction from the material energy. So create your own philosophy, create your own ideas, because from lust comes anger. If you want to enjoy the material energy, then you're going to become frustrated and angry, and from that frustration and anger comes delusion, which means all kinds of mental concoction. And therefore you can imagine anything you want. So you can go on gratifying your lust, anger, and greed in any way you want, because you just imagine anything you want to justify it. But there is actually a culture coming from time immemorial that creates human beings. Modern culture is not a culture, as I think it was Gandhi, when he went to England, he was asked, what do you think of English culture? And his reply was, I think it would be a good idea. So it's not culture, it's animal life in the lowest. Even the animals would be embarrassed by modern civilization. To call an animal, you know, to use a name, to call the modern persons in the modern society animals would be an insult to the animals. Even they're not so degraded. The animals, they don't smoke cigarettes. Most of them don't take any intoxication. A lot of them are vegetarians, and even those who aren't, they don't kill the animals by going hunting for them, kill them and then, you know, not eating them, just for the sake. The tiger doesn't think, well, I'm bored today, what should I do? Well, let's go hunting. Yeah, sure. Kill a few rabbits, you know, what's the big deal, you know? No, even the animals are not so degraded as modern so-called civilized persons. Not because they've thought deeply about the philosophy of life and they've decided to refrain from sinful activities, but because by nature, by the laws of nature, they're forced to obey the laws of nature. But human beings can become even more devious when they reject the Veda culture. And ultimately, Krishna says, asatyam apratishtam te jagato hornishvaram aparashvaram sambhutyam kimanyakamahaitukam. When they believe that there's no God, there's no foundation, there's no, asatyam, that there's no truth. Asatyam apratishtam te jagato hornishvaram, that there is no controller. Aparashvaram, it is all coming about by accident. Sambhutyam kimanyakamahaitukam, and that the only goal of life is to gratify the senses. When people think like that, then etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano nabhurya pravanyugra karmana shaye jagatohita. Following such conclusions and loss of themselves, the demoniac, they create horrible, unbeneficial works which are meant to destroy the world. So perhaps there are some demons, super demons, who are engaged in planning day and night how to create weapons. You can go on the internet and they'll tell you about the weapons they're creating. They're not satisfied with killing you with a bullet. They want to hit you with a bullet that's going to blow you to pieces, so that no one could find out who they killed. because you're scattered all over the horizon. They have guns which will shoot thousands of bullets at you once, so you'll disappear. So they're thinking day and night how to kill people in a better way. And they're given high salaries. They're given they get prestigious awards from colleges and universities. Just like our president here, he got awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace. Because I guess compared to the other presidents, he's killing less people per day than the other ones are. So they invent these ideas because they're basically, they're godless. If we don't take shelter of Krishna either from his instructions in the Vedic literature, if we don't take shelter of his instructions directly in Bhagavad Gita, then we're forced to simply remain serving our senses and mind. And the senses and mind will take us down to the gradually to the darkest regions of existence. The more one serves lust, the more it turns into greed. The more we serve greed, it turns into frustration, frustration into delusion, delusion into bewilderment and loss of memory and loss of intelligence. We forget any connection with our spiritual identity, any connection with God gets lost the more one becomes involved in sense gratification. So real civilization is to give people satisfaction, real material satisfaction, nice food, nice relationships, nice clean air, fresh water, so people don't hanker for these things and work unnecessarily to obtain them because they're readily available. Only because of demonic civilization, these things are becoming scarce. And therefore people can think actually about the goal of life when they hear from it from the right source. And the right source is not the internet, the radio, the magazines. These are all made by also foolish people. Andaya Tandera, Upagiyamanas, Te Pisha Tantra, Uru Dami Bada. They're blind people misleading other blind people, and the result is they're simply creating more problems for themselves and others. And the name is so-called solving them. So the conclusion is that although we're hearing about people with mystic powers or whatever, but these people, according to the Bhagavatam, they actually accomplished something even from the material point of view. Nowadays, people are enamored by people who can create, mostly I think 50% of the scientists are creating weapons and the other 50% are creating toys for people to play with. But people may think, oh, they've accomplished so much, you know, 3D, movies, whatever else. But these things are not real accomplishments. Here, at least from the material point of view, if they could stop people from dying, that would be an accomplishment. But instead, they're thinking ways how to kill people quicker. And even if they're not consciously thinking like that, their very activities are doing it. This Gulf oil spill. If they didn't build the oil wells, there wouldn't be any problem. And if people weren't attached to all these artificial things for their so-called happiness, what is it mostly used for, all their technology? People just playing games to escape the horrors of their reality that they've created. They have to play games all day long.
And the games are killing each other in the game.
Simply the frustration that they've created for themselves. Or pornography, which is the combined, all the movies, the entertainment, the sports, everything combined, doesn't even equal the income that people are deriving from pornography. So it's simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And they think they're advancing by glorifying it, by absorbing their minds more into it than is possible by ordinarily. But they're not deriving any more satisfaction. They're simply creating horrible and beneficial works which are gradually destroying the world. So as devotees, although this developing mystic powers we're not that interested in, even prolonging our life to live for 432,000 years so we can see the end of Kali Yuga and confirm that actually there are little people at the end of Kali Yuga. And they're trying to eat me. Although it's not so bad if they eat me because I've been eating prasadam for so long, therefore I'll be doing some beneficial work for them. Because I'll be eating prasadam. But this is not so important for us to, you know, take pictures at the end of Kali Yuga. Have our iPod or iPhone camera taking pictures of all the little people eating each other. No. Simply we should chant Hare Krishna, finish our business, and go back to the spiritual world, and understand that at the end of Kali Yuga, there'll be a Satya Yuga, and Satya Yuga will gradually degrade itself back to Kali Yuga, and it goes on and get on and on and on. We don't have to wait around to find out what's going to happen, you know, how nice it's going to be in Satya Yuga. Because one may become a little complacent during Satya Yuga, but gradually it'll turn back to Kali Yuga again. And people die, they grow old, they die in Satya Yuga, they die in Kali Yuga, they die in all the yugas. So I'll stop here, thank you. Any questions? Yes.
At the beginning of your lecture, when you were reading, I think from the purport, I think the process of dharma, moksha, jnana was rejected because it was basically these people are using this process of basically the interest is sense gratification. And my question is in regards to, I was just reading this story about this lady that has been coming to, it was coming to the temple for many years, 40 years coming to the temple, to the Krishna temple. But somehow after the end of the life, she still didn't have any type of devotion for Krishna. But she did come every Sunday to offer respect, whatever. But in her consciousness, it was not really Krishna. We just, she came pay respect, made offerings to Krishna, but they went back to their business as usual, family life, worrying for their grandsons and all that. And so I was reading that this type of, because at the end of the life, she thought, what happened to you? You went for so many years to the temple, but at the end, you don't have love for Krishna. And his master said, well, this is not really, because you were not really doing any bhakti, you were doing some sort of dharma to gratify yourself. So my question to you, we have, now that Isu is growing, we have a responsibility for us, a different setting as a congregation. We have many members that can come too often, and they have this, they feel duty bound to come to the temple, especially within the Hindu community. We have a great Hindu community support for this temple. And again, my question to you, as a member of this community, how can we preach to this setting of our congregation to be aware that we really want them to develop love for Godhead?
Well, just tell them that. I mean, if they listen to you, I mean, we give them prasadam, we chant Hare Krishna, hopefully they get some taste for listening. But if they're coming for very really fixed in their objective, that here is God or a demigod, and as we heard that song, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV, Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. So if we're praying like that, then what can we do? That they're actually thinking that there's going to be some happiness in the material world. It's going to be very difficult to convince them to give it up. You know, people won't give up what they actually think is going to make their lives happy and successful. Maybe if they get some experience in the material world where they suffer, then they come to the Hare Krishna movement and they pray, you know, oh Krishna, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize the material world was a place of suffering. And then, you know, that's the only, unless one is inquisitive, why am I suffering? What is the purpose of life? Then it's very hard to advance in devotional life. What to speak of, one thinks I'm actually enjoying now, And in the future, we're even going to enjoy more. And if God can help him, then, you know, we offer him our $1.25 every week. It's more almost like a gamble. Here's $1.25, you know, see what happens.
So you could be coming to the temple, and if you don't have the right attitude, that's also guaranteed that you would have to
come over. Well, if you don't have any knowledge, if you don't hear the class attentively, you don't hear the philosophy, you actually believe, you have some faith that Krishna is God, but you think God is meant to supply me with what I want, you're considered pious, but it's still a material consciousness.
Actually, I was reading this one verse. It's not a verse, actually. I was just reading. It said, "It doesn't. Even if you chant the Maha Mantra offensively, indirectly or directly, if you just keep chanting, eventually, you know, you will start becoming pure. So I guess maybe not in this life, but eventually she'll start, you know, by being with Krishna, or, you know, just keep being Krishna consciousness. Eventually, your next life, next, you get closer and closer."
Not really.
Or something like that, you know, because I was...
Not really. It says, and we recite the verse sometimes, that one can go on chanting the holy name for millions of lifetimes, but if he doesn't get rid of the 10 offenses, he won't make any progress towards love of God. Whereas Prabhupada writes in the purport of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 272, that one can obtain divine life in one moment, just like King Kadvanga Maharaj. We're not after millions of years. It's simply a question of understanding and accepting the fact that we're Krishna's servants. So you can go on chanting Hare Krishna, but if it's infested with the 10 offenses, you can go on chanting for millions of lifetimes, you won't get love of God. Just like you light a fire, but if you keep on pouring water on it, what's the value of lighting? What's the difference?
I was reading yesterday. If you're chanting offensively, keep chanting, eventually you'll...
If your idea is to get free from the offenses.
Right.
But if you're determined to keep on with your offenses, you don't...
I'm trying to explain this, I guess. Is by chanting, if you're, you know, with love, and just, like, you might not know everything yet, but
that's a different situation. Someone who's trying to make progress, even though it's slow, one will make progress. But one has no idea what progress is and not really trying to make it, that one is seeing Krishna as simply a part of one's material plan to enjoy and control the material nature, then one won't make any progress. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grantharaj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.